With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Willie asking me on Twitch, who's more hated in Houston, Garrett Cole or Justin Verlander? It's Garrett Cole, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel like people don't hate Justin Verlander all that much.
Not that it was his fault, but Garrett Cole didn't bring you a World Series. Justin Verlander was brought here to take you to the promised land, and he fulfilled his duties. He did what he had to do. At that point, once he did that for you, everything else was just cake. It didn't work out and end the way you would have liked. He couldn't have predicted he was going to be hurt. Neither side could have. But he did what he was brought here to do, and therefore, for no other reason. And because of the way, it was one thing to say Cole left, but the fact that we've highlighted the way he left, the Boris hat, the I don't want to answer the post-game questions because I don't work here anymore kind of mentality from Mr. Kermit the Frog voice didn't sit well with a lot of people. He could have just said,
I don't quite know how to answer that, to be honest.
I mean, if there was a thing that he said he loved his time in Houston, he's always wanted to be a Yankee and he is deciding to leave, that'd been fine, but he did it a different way and that's why people don't like him.
713-780 ESPN. Who do you dislike more, Garrett Cole or Justin Verlander? 713-780-3776. Here's one key difference. Justin Verlander was on the 2017 team that is the only World Series champion in organization history. Garrett Cole is not. Garrett Cole was on the 2019 team that went to the World Series and was a game away, but never won the World Series. 713-780 ESPN. Have had a couple of people text me this or tweet me this and text it in. Talking about how PETA wants Major League Baseball to rename the bullpen to Arm Barn because it's degrading towards bulls. I don't even know if I want to take this seriously.
I don't, because I don't really take a lot of PETA seriously, and because I had to work for an owner and his wife who religiously believed in PETA and forced us to execute certain things that were embarrassing for us because of PETA, that's stupid. There's a lot of other ways that they could focus their efforts to doing things that actually could make a difference about caring for the lives of animals, but renaming the bullpen? Get out of here.
Yeah, I'm not for that.
Miss me with that.
713-780-3776. Deshaun Watson news seemed to be quieted down, right? Like, we're not getting those rumors left and right. Ian Rappaport's not tweeting left and right. Josina Anderson's not tweeting left and right. We saw Aaron Wilson, John McClain, Mark Berman. They got the memo from the Texans brass last week that they had a trade done for Miami, but they wanted to basically shop around. Carolina, if you want to believe reports, was kicking the tires. Then all of a sudden they pull out yesterday saying that they don't have interest in Deshaun Watson for now. The Miami stuff is quieted down a bit as well. Flores saying Tua's our guy. Tua saying I'm not wanted here. It seems like everything's getting quiet. Is the news getting quiet because this is all fading away and nothing's going to get done before Tuesday? Or is it getting quiet because something might get accepted here pretty soon?
It ain't happening. Jeremy, I've said it all along. I stand by it. And if it does, I'll be surprised. And depending on what they get back, I'll tell you if I'm happy or I'm sad. But I said all along, I don't think he's going to get traded, nor should he. I don't think any general manager in this league should be trying to make a move for him unless they have intel that we don't have, that a lot of people don't have, in terms of knowing that this isn't, there aren't going to be long-term ramifications with the 22 cases that have been brought up and the others that have spoken up with authorities and otherwise about what he's done off the field. And because there's no competition, as we talked about last week into this week, because there's not multiple teams to get the Texans the best offer possible, he ain't going on anywhere, so therefore he's not going to be traded anywhere until it's a more conducive environment and climate for the Texans to get everything that they can get out of this deal, because they have to. It's their only valuable asset on the roster that can help speed up this rebuild. So that's why they've got to handle this thing, be delicate with kid gloves, and make sure they do it the exact right way. Rushing into a decision before the deadline, because the deadline's coming up, is not a reason to get a deal done.
And you're not trying to win next year.
No.
I mean, it's a lot different, the fact that you expect this to be a long rebuild, done the right way. You don't want to. You're not really looking to even win until about three. Like, the window starts in year three through year five for Caserio, and year three is probably even too early. You're not trying to win next season, so this isn't something that you should rush. Peter King, longtime NFL guy, he thinks the same thing.
Why would you make a trade for less than you probably could get next March? You're not getting anything that's going to help you for the rest of this year. So why, oh why, won't you wait 4 months to let the bidding begin? And I understand that they want to be done with it. I get it. But I would think it would be worth it to continue to have the headache of Deshaun Watson around your, you know, hanging over your head, if it's going to mean that you'll get 30% more in value if you wait 4 months to make a trade.
So that was Peter King yesterday on with the Wheelhouse, discussing the Deshaun Watson, just wait on him. And that's the stance that I feel most of the city has. We posed the question yesterday to our audience, 713-780-ESPN, because a lot of people are getting tired of hearing about Deshaun Watson. They're getting Deshaun Watson fatigue. They're tired of hearing these reports and nothing coming of it. They're tired of hearing these rumors and nothing coming of it. But still, even with that fatigue, I think most of the city and most Texan fans are still willing to say, just wait till the offseason. Like, we're putting up with a 1-6 team right now that's not very good. We can see the rest of the season through, trade all the veterans before next Tuesday's deadline. Let's just wait for Deshaun Watson into the offseason. Like, the fans are willing to wait. The organization should be willing to wait.
Yeah, and again, much ado about nothing, right? But this is exactly what we've said all along. It's the same reason why Jay Glazer and otherwise, when they stir the pot and they bring up his name and they say this or that is happening, it's not because there's a lot that's going to come to fruition with it. It's because they're going to get attention and they're going to get clicks and they're going to get noticed and people are going to talk about it. And look at how many people mentioned Jay Glazer the day that he mentioned that there, you know, that this was coming back to the surface, or, you know, who's going to be the next, you know, NFL on the beat reporter, Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport, whoever, that hears multiple teams, Josina Anderson. Hey, there are other teams Deshaun Watson's open to. Well, Josina just got a whole bunch of clicks and attention, but you know what didn't happen? A trade didn't get made. There weren't, you mentioned it, Mark Berman and the locals, and John McClain. I thought it was supposed to happen as early as last week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where are we now?
There was a deal in place, right?
Yeah.
Aggie Matt texting in, 713-780-3776. Look, it's a fair point, too. Aggie Matt says, because in 4 months, more information could come out against Deshaun that decreases his stock. If a trade's going to be made, though, before November 2nd, you're going to have so many provisions in place where the, you know, it's basically a third rounder that turns into a second, turns into a first if he plays X amount of games. Like, Miami's not going to just give you 3 first-round draft picks and say, here you go, you can have them. They're going to put some things in place in the deal where it's basically where Deshaun has to be active or Deshaun has to be on our roster. Same thing with, like, the Carson Wentz. We're trading him to Indy. He can turn into a first-round pick if he plays an X amount of games. It would be something along those lines anyways. So if you make a trade before the deadline, you're not really getting the insurance of trading him because more stuff could come out on him. Miami or whoever trades for Deshaun before the November 2nd deadline would put those policies in place anyways. So hold on to him. Get the most you possibly can. If more comes out, yeah, you're screwed, but like, if you do it now, you get 3/3. You know what I mean? So I'm with you. You just wait. You hope that there's not more stuff that comes out on Deshaun Watson and that you can get a big return for your franchise quarterback when the time comes. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Rockets are in action tonight.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They're 2-2 against the spread. I'm telling you, that's how you monitor their record. They're 2-2 against the spread. They're 2-2 against the spread. They're 1-3 on the year. They're home for the Jazz tonight.
As Craig would say, the hated, loathed Utah Jazz.
They are. They are hated
still,
and loathed. Absolutely.
They're good. Mm-hmm. You're not.
I don't think that
the rivalry is gone.
The hate's not as strong as it once was. But yeah, you don't, still don't like the Jazz. I mean, ask Vernon Maxwell how he feels about the Jazz.
Well, I love Vernon Maxwell.
We'll have to pay Dell time and a half next time we have Vernon Maxwell on.
Dell's playing Space Invaders with the dump button when we have Vernon on, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's not even close to what it used to be. Matt Harpering and Stockton and Malone aren't walking through that door.
You shouldn't put Harpering in that conversation. Like, I know Harpering's hated, but you can't put him in the same conversation as Stockton and Malone.
Not as Hall of Famers, Jeremy.
It's weird to me that the way it sounded.
Because there's a guy that was hated.
I know he was hated.
Before Pat Beverly, Matt Harpering was the guy.
And I know.
It's kind of the reason why I always had the comment that I had, and I always bring him up when talking about Pat Beverly, because before Pat Beverly, it was Matt Harpering that 30 teams in the league wouldn't be sending Christmas cards to, but that fans of the Jazz for Harpering or fans of the Rockets for Beverly would make up for it because they loved him when he was a part of their franchise. Matt Harpering was a complete dirty, freaking head-hunting cheap shotter. But you know what? He's now doing TV for the Jazz.
Is he
got
really?
A lifelong career out of it because he lived up to the role and he loved it. He embraced it. I don't think Pat's doing TV anytime soon. But you know what? He could do better maybe than what they got. But the thing is, the rivalry's gone. People making a big deal. They're right now, they're grasping for anything Rockets that they can actually look for as a positive. Like yesterday, Jalen Green playing one-on-one with John Wall. And John Wall, I guess, evidently saying he's trying to tutor Jalen Green. I cringed about that, as you know, in the preseason and before. If he can be a positive influence, I hope. I saw too much of, because we've been talking about structure and control of the, and working with these kids and looking like they're just all doing their own thing and there's no structure on the offense and it's hard to watch. And then they go to the sidelines and Wall is like yucking it up with them and you're going, what is going on here? So at least if you can get something that actually is beneficial for Jalen Green out of John Wall, I'm for it. But overall, this is exactly what we prepared you for. This is what the Rockets are going to be. The good news, as it compares to the Texans, is the Texans have nobody you could base your future on. The Rockets have several players that are going to be a part of their future.
You hope so. I mean, yeah. You still have questions about if Jalen Green's going to turn into that star you hope he can be. I have questions if Kevin Porter Jr. is really a point guard in this league. You hope that they can develop into that. Elsewhere around the NBA last night, Russell Westbrook and the Lakers blow a 26-point lead to the lowly Oklahoma City Thunder. Russ got ejected late in the game. One of the Thunder stole an inbounds pass with like 4 seconds to play and laid it up and dunked it home. Didn't need to do it, could have dribbled out the clock. Russ got in his face, got thrown out of the game.
Yeah. And he had every right to do it.
I thought so, too.
He had every right to go at him. He had every right to say, you know what, man, the game was over. It was decided. There's certain things you just don't do, like rubbing it in. And Russ got upset about it. The bigger thing is, like you said, you blow a 20-some point lead. LeBron's not playing. And you lose to a team that the Rockets blew out on opening night here in Houston by more than 25 points. It's not supposed to happen to a Laker team that I told you from the start of the season all along. I thought they were too old. I thought that they only had the three guys. I wasn't sure how Russ was going to fit in. But that's why I said the Nets were head and shoulders above the Lakers. Problem right now is the Nets aren't playing great either. Kyrie hasn't played yet. And James Harden is now trying to make excuses for why he's not the 30-40-point guy he used to be, because he still doesn't trust his hamstring.
Three straight games that Harden hasn't scored over 20 points, and the most points he scored in a game this year was 20 in Game 1, Game 2. He scored 20 in both of those, has not hit 20 since that mark, three straight without 20. Kind of weird saying that when it comes to James Harden. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we return, Jose Altuve homered again yesterday, 22 career postseason home runs, tied for second most in Major League Baseball history. He's the greatest Houston Astro ever, right? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the Cars for Kids program. Look, it's a great program. All the money stays here locally. It's done at the Houston Can Academies, and the Houston Can Academies help kids get a second chance to get their degree. You should care about that. And if you do, it's great. And it's just another reason why you should donate your vehicle, running or not. If it's collecting rust and dust, or it's just an eyesore you want to get rid of, or just something you haven't had the time to move off your property, an SUV, a car, a boat, a truck, a trailer, it doesn't matter. That's what Cars for Kids does. And the bigger thing is it does you the favor. It does you the solid because you don't have to pay for a tow truck. You don't have to pay anything out of pocket. You actually profit and benefit. How do you profit? Well, because you don't have to pay for a tow truck. There's no money going out of your pocket. You get the tax write-off, so there's a benefit there. Then, when you mention ESPN 97.5, when you set everything up, you're going to get a $50 Visa gift card. Cha-ching. You're going to cash in yet again. And then the process really begins because your donation is off your property. It's done everything that you needed it to do, but now it's going to do so much more. It's going to turn into resources for these kids as they try to get their degree. Some need bus fare, book money, maybe a meal in their stomach so that they can concentrate on food and not how hungry they are. It's all done locally, and it's all done based on your donations. So if you have something you've been thinking about donating, or now you strike a chord with what you're hearing from me and say, hey, I can do something that can make a difference. I got something I can donate today. Check them out today, carsforkids.org, and see how you can be a part of the success stories that is Cars for Kids. You can also call them at 713-225-4226, but at the end of the day, it's always the most important thing you should remember, right off the car and not the kid.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Smiley on the season, 11-4 with a 4.48 ERA, is the first pitch that he throws to Jose Altuve is cranked out of the ballpark.
Jose Altuve, home run yesterday. First pitch swinging, by the way. Remember how many people were telling us that they were so annoyed by Jose Altuve first pitch swinging yesterday before game two? He's 2-for-5, hit the home run, doubled in the first inning. The home run for Jose Altuve, his 22nd in his postseason career. It matches Altuve with Bernie Williams, tied for the second most in playoff history. Manny Ramirez, the only player that's in front of him, he has 29. Altuve hit 22 in 75 games. Bernie had 22 in 121 games. Manny had 29 in 111 games. So Altuve doing it at a quicker pace. You think he gets to 29? Over the course of his career?
I think he can. I don't know that he will.
It's going to be...
Yeah, I think that a lot
goes into it. Yeah.
A lot depends on keeping this team together enough so that they can consistently make runs into the play. Not just get there, but make some runs in the playoffs so that he gets enough games to keep going. Because look, what he's done in the amount of games that he's done it as opposed to everybody else that has the numbers is just mind-boggling. The thing that, to your question before the break, in terms of the greatest Astro of all time, there's no doubt that he is and he should be. But people have revisionist history, as we know, doing this show on a daily basis. But the other thing is that Hall of Fame, right? You got two that are already in. The thing that's going to be interesting is, whether it was true or not, how many of these crotchety, old school, grudge-holding voters for Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame are going to look at Altuve, and instead of judging the body of work and all of the successes he's had along the way, remember the fake story, the fake news about the buzzer, and think that just like the steroid era, they can make similar comparisons and go, that's why I'm not voting him in, or I'm going to intent. Look, voters have said in the past, I'm intentionally making certain guys wait it out, sweat it out. I want them to panic. Maybe I don't even want them to get in. That's what, unless they change the voting criteria in the process, he might be up against that.
He's going to get in at some point. He still has work to do.
Yep.
Like, he still needs to add the counting stats as well. I mean, he's looking at right now, you look at how many hits he has just under 1,800. Like, he's got some work to do.
I don't know. Do you think he gets to 3,000? Because 3,000 is a tough number, just like 300 wins pitching.
Probably not. I mean, he's going to be 32 years old next year. He's walking more. He's not swinging as many. He's not swinging as often as he used to be, if you can actually believe that. 164 home runs. I mean, he still needs to get the counting numbers up there to be like a lock for the Hall of Fame. I believe he will get the numbers to be eventually a lock for the Hall of Fame. But yeah, Hall of Fame voters are elitist.
Yep.
And yeah, they're going to make a Houston Astro wait a few years before they vote him in. I totally don't believe that Jose Altuve will be like a first ballot guy, anything like that. Look, I mean, Barry Bonds isn't a Hall of Famer.
He very well could be if he continues on the doing postseason things.
I don't think so.
And also stat. Look, because you talk about it. So he's 32. too.
Well, I'm talking about because of the perception, because he was an Astro. I'm not saying numbers-wise. I'm saying they're going to punish him because he was a Houston Astro in 2017. I'm not saying because of the numbers. So, I mean, Hall of Fame voters do that all the time, as you mentioned. Barry Bonds isn't a Hall of Famer. Barry Bonds has the most home runs in Major League Baseball history. He has the most home runs in single-season history. And the fact that he's not a Hall of Famer, never tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs in baseball. He did it in the court of public opinion, but not for actual Major League Baseball's rules.
But I think at the same time, it's not just getting in. It's like when we talked about Ken Griffey Jr. should have been the first unanimous choice to get in. And some of those same voters are going to go, nope, not him, not now. Don't like the fact that he wore his hat backwards a lot, and that pissed me off. And the fact that they can get away with it means the system is flawed. But that doesn't mean it's going to change, because we know that baseball is as old school as it gets in a lot of ways.
The only player to have ever reached 100% of the votes?
Mariano Rivera.
The only one ever.
Jeter and Griffey Jr. absolutely should have been.
Jeter received one vote shy.
Yep, and it was a guy, again, trying to be a D-bag.
Yeah, like it's just, that's the way the baseball
He called him out in
are.
His speech.
It's ridiculous.
It is. Ken Griffey Jr. to me is the greatest natural baseball player I've ever seen in my life. I don't think that based on his body type and otherwise, anyone would ever say that he ever did steroids. And the fact that he was a five-tool player, he did it in a tough market that was a really bad team for a while and resurrected a franchise. And everything that he did well. I don't know how, in my mind, that was the ultimate 100% of the boat. Unanimous decision for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's stupid how they get it done. To me, it's like a yes or no question. Is the guy a Hall of Famer? Yes or no? Like, it shouldn't matter how long they waited. And I hate how the way they do that.
And it's not just baseball, but you hear all these stories all the time about how, like, even for the NFL, for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, writers have to go into a ballroom and they have to nominate and clearly let you know who they think should get in. And then it's almost like debate club. And then they have to debate the reasons why everyone else in the room can fire shots at the reasons why not. And then after they all have their fun and games, their food, their beverage, and they duke it out verbally, they get to decide it that way. It should be, like you said, it's cut and dried. Where are the stats? What are the accomplishments from a team perspective with championships and other things and accolades? And then it's a yes or a no. They have too much power and control right now.
3364 texting in saying, I'm not sure Griffey didn't do steroids. If it came out that Griffey did steroids, it wouldn't surprise me. Like, anybody in that generation, everybody during that time period in Major League Baseball, if you told me anybody, like literally any name, if you've been like, yeah, that guy was on steroids, I would say, yeah, does not surprise me. I'm not surprised. I don't think Griffey did, but if I found out tomorrow that he did, I wouldn't be shocked.
I don't think anybody
thinks he
did.
That's how dirty the game was at that time, though.
And you're right. I'm not going to dispute that it's a possibility. Look, Rafael Palmeiro is a guy I thought never did. And the fact that he got drilled after he went and testified that he didn't means, look, all bets are off. And it's possible. But look at his body type. Look at his bloodlines. Look at the fact that he grew up in the game. It's the same way with Vladdy Jr., right? I mean, the fact when you grow up in the game around a major league clubhouse, you have access to all the best tools, the best coaches, the best techniques, and the fact that your bloodlines say that you're going to be pretty damn good anyway, and the fact that then you take it to the highest level and you don't look bulked up and don't have injuries and such because you're overbulked. It just, in my own, it'll just be my own personal opinion. I don't think he ever touched a steroid. And I think that he was the ultimate example of one of the greatest baseball players to ever play the game.
I don't think he did either. I want to be very clear on that, because Albert Pujols, I think, sued some Los Angeles radio guys for slander whenever they mentioned that Pujols did performance-enhancing drugs.
Right?
So very clearly want to tell you that I don't believe Ken Griffey Jr. ever did performance-enhancing drugs.
I'm not worried about all that, but look, Ken Griffey Jr. is...
Well, I really don't believe that.
I'm biased in the fact that he's my favorite baseball player of all time.
Griffey is?
Yeah. Because of the fact that, I mean, you talk about defensively, when we talk about some of the throws he made, the way he climbed the wall, way he brought home runs back, he hit for power, he hit for average, he had speed around the bases. I mean, he was the ultimate baseball player.
You just liked him because he wore his hat backwards.
No, that too.
That's why you wear your hat backwards.
I think that was cool. I'm not wearing it backwards right now, am I?
Well, you must be thinking of somebody else besides Griffey right now. But
Bo Jackson was another one, but Bo Jackson was just because of his sheer athleticism.
He was ahead of his time. Struck out a lot, hit for a lot of power, would have been perfect for this generation. But the reason that I brought up that question, Altuve, the greatest Astro ever, 713-780-3776. Tyler Scott, our assistant program director, says, I get the nostalgia and everything. He tweeted this yesterday, but it's weird that people still consider Biggio and Bagwell the best Astros. And I mentioned this to to Tyler in my tweet. Like, I haven't even thought about that. Like, I haven't considered, like, is Jose Altuve better than Craig Biggio? Is Jose Altuve better than Jeff Bagwell? Like, my automatic thought is, yes, he is, mostly because of what they did in the postseason. I mean, Biggio, Bagwell, what they did in the postseason, not great. They never win a World Series for the Astros. Got to one, got swept. Jose Altuve doesn't have the counting numbers that Biggio and Bagwell have
yet.
I think he will get to that point. But then for what he's done in the postseason, I believe that it's pretty overwhelming that this city thinks Jose Altuve is the greatest Houston Astro ever.
And look, it's not like Biggio and Bagwell come out squeaky clean either, because there was a lot, like you were talking about, in that era, there were a lot of people that believed they were never caught. But there are a lot of people that believe that that doesn't mean they didn't do them. And they got big. I mean, look at Biggio. He was an undersized catcher and an infielder and a center fielder. And all of a sudden, one day, he got real stocky, real solid, real muscular, and started hitting for more power. You know? And so I'm not here to tell you that they did, they didn't, or what they did do. But what I'm here to tell you is they weren't squeaky clean either, and they got in. And I believe that Altuve is going to get in. I think it's really unfortunate that some internet troll that wanted to be internet famous decided to create this doorbell buzzer mentality under a jersey for a home run that hurt his favorite team, and suddenly everybody believed it, and now he's tainted, and he's enduring FU Altuve chants all over the league. When you look at the numbers, the body of work, and everything he accomplished, I don't know how you argue how great he's been for not only the franchise, but the game of baseball.
The best Astro ever, right, Houston? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we return, what Miami's saying about these Deshaun Watson trade rumors. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chef Jay's been on hold a while. Sorry to keep you waiting. You're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
What's going on, guys? How's it going, man?
What's cooking, Chef Jay?
Unbelievable.
Hey, man, everything, baby. Check it out, man. Check it out. I got two things. First thing is, and I'll hang up after this.
We lost Jay.
Did you hang up already, Chef Jay?
I thought you were going to hang up after the question, not before the question. There we go.
Okay, start over, Chef Jay. start over. We lost you.
Say it again?
Got to start over. We lost you.
Yeah, you cut out right when you started to ask your question. So you have to ask your questions.
Okay, sorry about that. All right, we got to do something with Bregman. I don't know what it is. He has a hard time hitting while we got, you know, runners on base. He's late. He's not reading the pitches. I don't know if he's not doing enough film study or what's going on.
That's
something's
not
happening. Something's going on. Not sure what it is. Honestly, I think I would like to see him bat first. I think he'll be a lot better with a lot of less runners on base. But that's just my synopsis from it. My next question is, my statement would be, it has to suck to be Russell Westbrook, knowing that your best is at a detrimental to your team. And it took me a while to really think about this, but if you look at the analytics and him and winning and losing when it comes to Russell Westbrook, when he plays his best, the team struggles. They don't win games. Every team he's been on, no matter how many triple-doubles it is, it doesn't transform into wins. So, I mean, what does that say for his career to be a triple-double guy but never win games unless he had, you know, like he had with Harden and Durant? But it just sucks. I'm watching the Lakers, and I'm like, man, they can really do without Russell Westbrook right now. That's how bad it is. But I'll go ahead and let you guys chop it up, man. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jay. He had a quadruple at a double last night, by the way.
With the turnovers.
You know what? It's a great point, because I think at a certain point he elevated his game individually because he did something that hadn't been done in, what, 50-some-odd years, averaging a triple-double for the season and surpassing Oscar Robertson in career triple-doubles. And he did so much individually that I think he's a bona fide, locked Hall of Famer.
No doubt.
For all the individual accolades. But Chef Jay is absolutely right in terms of does that, is that, and this is the knock on Harden for so many years, is the individual style of play conducive to or detrimental to the team's ability to win and win big and win a championship? And it's something that's up for debate.
To me, it comes down to, it can if they're the best player, right? Like if they're built around Russell Westbrook, if you're built around James Harden, you can win that way, but they're also just not quite good enough to be the best player in a championship team. It's been my criticism for James Harden for a long time, and I think it's fair to include it with Russell Westbrook, that both of those guys aren't capable, and especially now because they're older, they aren't capable of being the best player on a championship team. James Harden was close. I mean, Game 7 with Chris Paul. Look, I was a huge fan of Russell Westbrook. I love the way he plays the game. I was a huge fan of the Chris Paul trade. I thought it was going to work. I was terribly wrong with that. And once Russell Westbrook's not the best player in a team, he's not a good complimentary piece, mostly because he can't shoot the basketball.
I was going to say, but Jeremy, that's where I'm going to say it all comes down to. James Harden, I don't think mentally he's capable of being the best player on the team. Physically and with his skill set, he is.
Because but that counts, though.
It absolutely counts.
You have to be good at both.
But it's also then on the management to put the right team around you, too, so that your supporting cast kind of picks up your shortcomings, right? And that's why they've tried so many other sidekicks to Harden that maybe had that kind of gene that he didn't have. Chris Paul was the ultimate in terms of, but he wouldn't allow Chris Paul to do what Chris Paul needed to do to take him along from a mental standpoint to get where they needed to go.
He cared more about himself than the winning.
But I think that Russell Westbrook, the biggest knock on him, which is why he can't be your best player, is because he can't shoot. Because if you build around your best player like James Harden, it is possible to win it all if your supporting cast kind of picks up your shortcomings. Russ Westbrook being your best player and having the ball in his hands as much as he has it in his hands, defenses are smart enough to say, okay, well, then we're going to force you as the best player with the ball in your hands to beat us. Therefore, we're going to cut off what you do best by penetrating and attacking the basket and saying, beat us that way. It's what almost worked to defend Giannis and the Bucks. But Giannis was finally smart enough to realize what he needed to do to get others incorporated and then still be able to do what he had to do to win. I don't think Russell Westbrook has the ability, when things are taken away from him or defenses change, to kind of highlight what he doesn't do well, to distribute and fit in with others. And that's his biggest knock.
As a complimentary piece,
correct,
for sure. I mean, as the best player, whenever he was in his prime, he was great. He just wasn't good enough.
But
and
in the playoffs,
most of that was because of his shooting.
Remember, yeah, as you say, and the best player was relied upon when the game was on the line to do what best players do, and because he couldn't shoot, he didn't come through.
Yeah, and part of it, too, is just, I don't know if it's like not willing to accept the role, because, I mean, he could still be a really good complimentary piece, but he can't be shooting 5-6 threes a game whenever it's not good for your team. I mean, well,
and you touched
damaging
on this, right? This is what you brought to the table, and this is what I've always said about both guys. If they had it to do again, if they were actually smart basketball minds, would have never done what they did. Kevin Durant was Batman, and he was the perfect Batman to a Robin that has the skill set of Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
The problem was Russ couldn't accept Robin anymore. He had to prove that he could be Batman. In order to do that, Durant had enough. They separated. He went his own way. If you keep that team together, and especially with some of the other complimentary pieces, whether it's Ibaka or Harden or the other guys, you had the makeup of a team that would have been massively successful over about a 10-year period.
Dare you say a dynasty?
It had the makings of it, right, without the championships and the wins. But because it all came to a head when they blew the 3-1 lead and lost to the Warriors, that's when Russ said, push is coming to shove. I'm going to be Batman or I'm out of here. So instead, KD split. And if you look at it, both guys could have really, I'm not going to say Kevin Durant needed anybody, because Kevin Durant has a lot of what, including championships, although some will be questioning how he got it.
Right.
But he has the entire complete skill set, and he doesn't have the shortcomings of Harden mentally in terms of owning up to being the guy that's going to take the criticism too. But I think that if they had it to do over again, if you kept those two together and they both said, you know what, we were wrong and we should have stayed together, that was the perfect compliment for each guy.
Now you're asking, you know, a mature, that would have required a mature decision of a player who's been in the league for a decade now in their 30s, making right. a 20-year-old make that decision. I think the fact that, you know, they wanted to be stars, they wanted to be about the brand, that was the problem.
They wanted
that,
to be the man.
Yeah, that's the problem that broke up Oklahoma City. As far as Jay says about Bregman, I don't think that the Bregman being in the leadoff spot is actually a bad idea. It's a bad idea right
really?
Now, though. Right now, it is. Bregman's a huge on-base guy, sees a lot of pitches, he works the count. He's more of a prototypical leadoff guy than Jose Altuve is, who swings at a lot of first pitches. But now's not the time to do
but
it.
But we've also talked about the fact that with what Bregman's going through right now, his eye
again,
has changed.
Again, right now is not the time to do it. Bregman's still a better on-base guy
than
Jose
experiment
Altuve
at all
even right
series.
Now. No. You're not changing the lineup at all right now. This team's best offense in baseball, you're sticking with it. But if you're asking me who's a better leadoff man between Bregman and Altuve, Bregman's a better leadoff
guy. I disagree. Because of the fact that Altuve has speed. Altuve has wheels that matter. I think that Altuve
runs into some outs.
Altuve hits for a better average,
but he doesn't get on base as much.
Again, you can nitpick it, but if you're saying one versus the other, Bregman doesn't have speed.
I mean, that's not a nitpick though, because the one number that I'm looking for more than anything from a leadoff man is on base percentage. That is the key. That's the key factor for me more than anything else.
It
that's
is
not a nitpick.
If you're going with old school mentality for what a leadoff hitter
school.
Is.
That's Moneyball.
No,
absolutely.
But at the
it
same
is.
Time, that's the same reason why Kyle Schwarber and guys are batting leadoff, because they have big pop and they have big power and they're looking
and they
for
get
big
on
production.
A lot.
But some do, some don't. Look, Anthony Rizzo was also a guy that was pushed up to the top of the lineup. And Anthony Rizzo is a guy that, you know, has a lot of shortcomings as a hitter as well. So, and he's not going to do the kind of things that a traditional leadoff hitter does. But that's the different way when you talk about analytics that leadoff hitters are looked at. But in terms of Altuve for this team, and the fact that what he does do sets the table still for others, but still he's able to do what he does for the betterment of the team to be an offensive force, he's the leadoff hitter for this team. The thing is, I get it, and I totally agree on just if we're starting from scratch on day one of opening day and saying Bregman's eye is better at the plate and he sees more pitches, absolutely agree.
To your point, though, they were searching for a leadoff guy this year with George Springer gone, and they were kind of dabbling with a lot of people in spring training. And apparently, Jose Altuve went into Dusty's office and said, the guys want me leading off. Like, everybody in the locker room wanted Altuve to be the leadoff guy. So that kind of speaks to your
Polillo
point.
And I, we were doing the show. He was adamant against it and said, there's one guy that's not going to be the leadoff hitter for this team and shouldn't be, and it's Jose Altuve. And I said, I disagree. I think he's the only guy with the current construction of this lineup that should be the leadoff hitter for this team. Because otherwise, you're taking some guy that's never hit in the major leagues consistently, let alone as a leadoff hitter. And you're trying to still set the table for a very potent offensive lineup. And it's just worked out. But I think that you can also nitpick. He's not a good base runner in terms of stolen bases, but he's fast. So you could nitpick that, pick that with Altuve.
Yeah.
But no one thought, too, that he was going to be the same guy this year because of the fall off last year. He's just been the absolute perfect scenario for this team this season.
Dusty Baker might be one of the only managers that have actually done it. Because if you play the analytical sabermetric game, Altuve wouldn't be the leadoff guy for this team. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
Do you see Jake Meyers as potentially a guy someday that's going to be a leader? Because, again, he brings a lot of extra power to the table, but I think that's also a detriment to the way he doesn't hit for average because of it. And I don't know that he has the wheels or the other reasons to say that he should be a leadoff hitter.
I mean, for me, like, I'm almost always leading off the guy that gets on base the most. Like, it's that simple for me. And maybe that's too analytical. Maybe that's too by the numbers. But I don't care about the speed. I don't care so much about the power. The two most important spots in the lineup are the leadoff spot and the cleanup spot. You need good offense and good production from both of those spots. For me, on base percentage in that leadoff spot's the single most important thing and the only thing I even look at. As far as watching film, Alex Bregman is a junkie. Like, he is a film junkie. He's watching plenty of film, maybe too much film. He sent this on Instagram earlier today, like a picture of Brooks Koepka trying to hit a ball off of the out of the lake, it looks like, some tour event. And he said, this is my launch position right now. I watched that documentary that Alex Bregman had whenever he came back from injury. No one watches more film on their swing than Alex Bregman does. I can promise you that.
J.D. Martinez, maybe.
Yeah. No one watches more. Maybe they're tied for the same in both amount. I mean, who knows? But he watches a ton of film. Not watching film is not a problem for Alex Bregman. 713-780-3776. No World Series tonight. Thursday Night Football is a good one, though. We get into it next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. First, I want to tell me something.
I do. I've been telling you all along that there are things that you should consider, even though with your lush flowing locks, to pass the word along to your friends and family members about the potential to get their hairline back or to fix that baboon's rear end they got going in the back of their head that they thought they're just going to have to deal with the rest of their life or get foams or creams or sprays to take care of. No, you can do it with your own natural hair thanks to my friend Doc Linville. I've seen John Granato's results. They're fabulous. I know Fred Fowler the same way, had a ton of work done, and it was successful. I think that when I met with Doc Linville, I went in with an open mind, but I was very, very uncertain about whether I would actually do something. But having talked to him, understood exactly what goes into it, how it's all my own hair, simply put, just replanted in other places on my head, made perfect sense to me. The fact that the technology and the way that they go about the procedure is so painless and so easy made it even more advantageous and interesting to me to get involved. And when I committed to doing it, I would never turn back and say that I would do it a different way. I'm so glad that I did. I'll see the full results in 6 to 9 months, but I see on a daily basis, all the follicles are still there. They're growing. And it's just like a baby's head. The initial hairs that are coming through are smaller and thinner, but as you cut them and as they continue to grow, they get thicker and more lush. And that's why they say it takes 6 to 9 months. But at the end of that 6 to 9 month period of time, I can see that I have a new hairline. I can see that I have a new outlook on what I'm going to look like and how confident I'm going to be that I have my old hairline back. It's exactly why you should look into it too. And even more so because you're an ESPN listener, you get a free consultation that normally costs $150, so they can explain to you how they can help you too. Go to 975hair.com, get all the details, set up an appointment with Doc Linville and figure out how they can help you too. Financing is available. It's easy. And like I said, minimal pain. I had no pain or discomfort the next day. I was out and about walking around doing all kinds of stuff, running errands, and you can be too. Check him out today. I believe in Doc Linville and his process of neo-grafting. Check out how it can help you as well. 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Josh in Beaumont tweeting in from an 821NBA.com article. Westbrook's teams are 136-46, 75% roughly winning percentage in his 182 career triple-double performances. The stats don't say that playing his best make his team worse. I would have never guessed that.
How many championships has he won?
Still at zero. Still hasn't won a single one.
Kind of the
neither is Harden.
Kind of the point we were making. But yeah, don't get lost in the real facts.
Brad Kellner is here with us.
BK, ladies
on the wheelhouse 3-7.
Gentlemen,
how you doing?
Better now.
Did you do post game last night?
I did post game last
boy.
Night. Yeah. Much earlier night last night than what we had in game one. So pretty grateful.
A lot more support.
Yeah, a lot more support. Grateful for Jose Urquidy working as fast as he does, throwing as many strikes as he does. And well, game two was an hour shorter than game one. So obviously nice to get a win, but also nice to wrap things up a little bit earlier.
I always lose track of time in World Series games because it's a World Series game. I didn't realize it was an hour shorter. An hour shorter?
A full hour.
Oh, these games lately have been like, these are the poster children for why people bitch about the game needs to be shorter and time more time conscious, because my God, these playoff games, there's been some of them pushing 5 hours.
Yeah, and it's okay if it's game five 2017 World Series and it goes 5 hours, but when it's game one and the game's kind of in hand for the last seven innings, you can't have a game.
It's not Mariners on June 1st on a Tuesday night that you want to see go this long.
You know what I always thought would be a radical idea for baseball, be smart and be a way to shorten the game? I always felt like there should be a white towel rule. Like, you know how pitcher, like whenever there's a team down by 10 runs in the fifth inning, they don't want to blow their bullpen, right? Throw in the towel. Call it a day.
Interesting. Yeah, my sort of suggestion.
No mas.
Can't do it.
Why not?
Well, as a marketing guy, BK, excuse me real quick, as a marketing guy, what I can tell you is you're going to get the backlash of the fan that paid to see a full game, and they're going to want a refund. They're going to want something else. They're going to want you to take care of the reason why you didn't fulfill your duty to give me a full baseball game I paid for.
Whatever.
That'll actually
just telling you.
Right? A lot of fans would leave
put it on the back of the
ticket.
Subject to change.
Yeah. Subject to shortening. Right? You still have to pay full price for one of these seven-inning doubleheader games, right?
So. That's right.
But you get two games for the price. Or extra innings, actually, because you're paying for one price for
two games.
Oh, you
don't have to pay for two?
I don't believe so.
Oh, I don't think so either.
And my suggestion has always been instill some sort of softball courtesy foul rule. So, like, as baseball fans, we're all fans of the 10 to 15 pitch at bat, but those take 5 minutes, and the casual baseball fan does not give a rat's ass, and they're looking for some action. I'm not saying one foul ball and then it's strike three or out, but like maybe two or three foul balls after the count gets to two strikes, and then you're gone.
I know we're going down a crazy rabbit hole here, but here's the thing. It's interesting. In other sports, you can just do running clock.
Yeah.
You know, you could just say, hey, in the NBA, if you're down 25 with 4 or 5 minutes to play or the fourth quarter, it's running clock.
Yeah.
You can do that. You can't do that in baseball.
No.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing that's always funny to me is, and especially when I visit other stadiums, when they put the clock that a lot of people aren't aware of is in center field for the hitter and the umpire to monitor between hitters. You have this amount of time. You have to be in the box. You have to do that. And how many guys just blow it off? And there's what someone's going to throw a flag on you?
Right.
Not coming.
Exactly.
There's talks that they could add a pitch clock with this new CBA, but that could be something that they do. They've experimented with the minors. They see it all the time in college baseball.
But we just proved the exact thing that they tried to alleviate with the mound visits of a couple years ago when Brian McCann was going out after every other pitch. And they're like, no, now you only get this many. It hasn't sped up the game one bit.
Yeah, they found other ways to slow it down, right? Yeah, I'm curious because y'all were talking about the CBA earlier. Like, obviously, a lot is going to get changed with baseball. We'll see if we have the DH, the universal DH, starting next year. But also, yeah, how many of those pace of play rules actually
get I don't know how you feel about it. I believe the DH is coming. I believe that from the standpoint, from a regular season perspective, they have accomplished a lot to speed up extra inning games with the runner on second base. As much as I don't personally like it, I think it does do what it's supposed to do. But I don't know how many of those others, because I'm kind of with Jeremy in the fact I'm not a big gimmick guy, but I believe that the DH, because it creates equality across the leagues, makes sense. I don't care for the runner on second base, but it did achieve the ultimate goal they wanted it to.
Yeah, baseball's at a weird crossroads, right? Because they want more scoring. Every sport wants more scoring. But baseball also wants to speed up the game, and it's tough to do both of those things, right? It's tough to come up with rules that can actually create.
But then when they get more scoring, then they go and redo the baseball because they had too much scoring. I mean, you pick a side and stick with it.
Yeah, it's always like the fine-tuning, right? And I don't like the guy in charge either, and Robert Manfred. No. What do you guys have coming up in the wheelhouse?
Well, we'll see you then.
It's going to be a great show. Best show ever. You just have to tune in. Lee Sterling at 5 o'clock giving his picks.
Yeah.
Been red hot as of late. He will join us. Oh, Frenchie. Jeff Francoeur will join the program at
4:30. You're tight enough to call him Frenchie?
I thought everybody was tight enough to call him Frenchie.
No, I'm not going to call him Frenchie.
Okay, what kind of tight are you asking me about?
I mean, are you buddies? Because normally you don't have a nickname that you go with a guy like that unless you've actually had a relationship with him. Not like a personal, physical relationship, but a friendship relationship.
I'm not sure if that was a tight thing that you were referring to, too.
I don't delve into your personal life.
I don't know. Can I call him Frenchie? You think that'd be weird? Like, I was calling Todd Callis.
There's only one way to find out.
I'm going
to
do it.
Well, that's like, that's like in my previous life here when we had A.J. Hinch on.
Yeah.
If you didn't call him Skipper, or make sure you cannot call him Coach.
You don't call a baseball coach.
I get it, but a lot of people don't realize that. But I'm just saying that's kind of the idiosyncrasies of certain guys. It's like Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
Some guys have an issue with it. Some guys don't give a rat's ass.
So A.J. Hinch was Deion before Deion?
A.J. Hinch was not going to answer your question if you didn't call him Skip or Manager.
What about A.J.? What if you called him A.J.?
I don't know.
Okay. I was wondering if you responded to AJ. All right, BK, we'll be listening.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for hopping in. Thanks for doing the post-game
show. The post-game show has been great. You and PC.
Appreciate it, guys.
713-780-3776. Joel's Packers are playing Thursday Night Football. Once you turn off the mic, you don't have to be delicate with it. It's off now, BK. Green Bay, Arizona, the Cardinals undefeated. Green Bay's won 6 straight, longest 2 winning streaks in the NFL. How are we feeling about it?
No, we're going to lose. Mano a mano, I would love to say with both teams healthy, that'd be a game that I can't miss and would really want to see. I have to watch, and I'm going to watch, and I'm a fan, so I'm going to watch. But I'm not expecting the Packers to win or even have a close game because you're taking away the biggest weapons that you have, which is the passing game. And when you don't have your top 2 receivers, and this franchise has obviously not gone out of its way to add the extra receiver or two that Aaron's wanted in the past. Randall Cobb, please don't even bring it to me. It's a detriment to the offense. And then when you talk about just all the different injured, really top quality players the Packers have right now, yeah, they lost J.J. Watt. But at the same time, you're talking about 5 defensive players and one of the top 3 offensive tackles in all of football are not going to play tonight. Packers are going to ball control. All this offense you've been seeing over the last couple of weeks when they've won 5 in a row, 6 in a row, it's going to change. They're going to try and run. When they're not running, they're going to try screen passes, muddles so that he's in, he can get rid of it quickly so he doesn't face pressure. It's not going to be fun to watch, and I firmly believe the Cardinals are going to win.
All right, but do the Cardinals win by 7 or more?
That I don't like that. When it was 6, up to 6, 6.5, I still would have taken the Cardinals. When you get to a touchdown and more, I'm not touching it.
I'm bitter that I got the Packers money line before the Devontae Adams news. But hey, that's where we're at. All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks to Dell for doing all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next. But first, got to remind you, Houston and SMU this Saturday at 6. Big game at TDECU Stadium. The scarlet hot Houston Cougars, winners of 6 in a row, undefeated in conference play, host the 19th ranked undefeated SMU Mustangs. Huge conference championship game implications for this year's I-45 rivalry. The winner will be in the driver's seat to reach the American title game. Call in all Cougs to join us Saturday to support the Cougars and enjoy the fun and pageantry of college football. It's Halloween weekend, so the theme on Saturday is Halloween. The kids come trick-or-treat, tailgate style, starting in that new expanded kid zone. Performance from the Spirit of Houston band. You can get all the pomp and circumstance of college football, the cheerleaders, Cougar Doll, Shasta and Sasha, and of course, DJ Me mixing it up in the student section. It's a blackout game, so come early, be loud, wear black. Special Cougar 4-pack on Saturday. 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 sodas, and 4 chips for only $60. And starting today, a flash sale. General admission tickets for only $10. That's right, just $10 to come see the Cougars and SMU Saturday at 6. Get yours now at uhcougars.com/tickets or call the UH box office at 713-GO-COUGS.
Well, hello!
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.